Our scripture reading this morning is found in the last chapter of the book of Genesis, where Joseph's brothers are concerned because their father is dead now, and this is what they're thinking. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil we did to him." So they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.'" And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, "Behold, we are your servants." Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. The word of the Lord. Very delighted I can be with you this morning and with you think about the coming of a new year. Everybody talked a lot about the coming of the year that's now ending. The year is 2000, you know, Y2K and all that sort of thing. And people aren't talking much about what 2001 might bring. It doesn't have the sense of drama that the year 2000 did. It's arguable, you know, as to whether the new century really starts now rather than last year. I see some knowing nods there. But nevertheless, the page is turned and we're headed for another year. You know, I was so much impressed as Glenn Phelps was praying. Impressed with the scope of his prayer, the way in which he was really thinking about all the aspects of our lives as we look ahead. And of course, you couldn't help but be struck by the number of people who have deep concerns as they enter a new year, health concerns and very serious health concerns. And then you think of our country and our nation and the way in which we face a new situation and what it may mean. It's a lot to cause us to reflect. You know, somehow or other, we seem to think that in this new century, we can pretty well plan how things are going to go. Our presidential candidates had plans, you know. And they told us about all the things that they were going to accomplish. One was more detailed than the other, but we got lots of plans described. And yet, you know, who's doing the planning, really? Joseph said, "Am I God?" Now, a little bit there, he almost looked as though he might have thought he was when he was rearranging his brothers' lives to find out whether they were really repentant or not. He was certainly getting into some pretty deep heart searching there, those of you who know the story. But nevertheless, Joseph knew he wasn't God. He knew that it wasn't God that had planned all this. It wasn't he who had planned all this, but that it was God who had planned it all. And really that's what I want to think with you about this morning. About God's plan for the year 2001. And his plan for you in this coming year. Because he has that plan, you know. The question of what the fabric of your life will be, you don't know it now. We don't begin to know it now. But what should we do? But to help us think about that, I want to remind you of the life of Joseph. The background for these words when he said, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." You know the story, I think. I think all of you are generally familiar with it. Many of you could tell it in great detail. Try it when you go home. Just see if you can tell it. You know, we think we know Bible stories until we tell them, and then we go back and look. So think about that, because these are marvelous stories, of course, true stories about real people. And remember, this story is about a boy who's 17, as the story starts, and you're given the story of 13 years in a very compact way, and you bring him from 17 to 30. Now, I won't ask you to raise hands or anything, but I wonder how many of you are in between 17 and 30. Well, it'd be an interesting thing. I really would like to see hands, but I won't do it. 17 to 30. In those 13 years, you have this amazing story. And of course, just to get in a little bit of a capsule, I want to analyze it a bit with you, but just to get in a bit of a capsule, it started out pretty great, you know. He was the favorite son of his father, and he was obviously a very interesting kid, and had some impressive dreams. He dreamt, you know, that he saw the sheaves. They were out in the field gathering sheaves of wheat and binding them up, and then in his dream there were 11 sheaves for his 11 brothers, and then they all bowed down to him. So this young man tells the brothers about this. Well, he's either naive or so much impressed with the fact that God's telling him something great and important that they need to know. They need to know. And then he has another dream, you know. The sun, moon, and stars all bow down to him. And now there are 11 stars for the 11 brothers, so you can fill in who the sun and moon are. And of course, actually, Jacob didn't have any trouble filling it in. And he said, "Do you really think that we're going to bow down to you, your mother and I?" And so, that's a rather interesting beginning. And of course, it didn't work out well with the brothers. You remember that. They didn't like him to begin with. And when they heard this dream business, this dreamer, they called him, they didn't like that at all. And so they actually hated him. And his father sent him to find them out where they were tending the pastures, you know. And he followed and found them and he was going to bring the message from the father to them. And they saw him coming and they said, "Here comes this dreamer. Here's our chance. Let's get rid of him." And you know the story about how they decided first to kill him and then... when Reuben intervened and said, "Don't kill him, throw him in a pit." He really wanted to pull him out later. He was the oldest brother and cared something for Joseph. But so they put him in a pit, and then there come along these Midianite traders, and Judah has a better idea. Don't kill him. Why should his blood be on our hands, after all? So... Here come these traders. We can sell them. Here's this caravan coming through with spices and stuff. We can sell them. Get a little profit out of it. Why not? Instead of blood, a little money. So they decide to do that. And so they sell them. And the story goes quickly on. It better go quickly. There's this business, you know, that when he gets sold to Potiphar, who's the captain of the guard for Pharaoh's house. And then, so he serves him. He's quite successful in that until he makes too good an impression on Potiphar's wife. And then there's that scene. She's always trying to get him to go to bed with her, and he won't do it. And finally, you see the rage of a woman scorned, you know. And so she screams and accuses him of attempting to force her and so on. And he runs away, and she just has his garment. And now she's screaming at the top of her lungs, you know, to get all... This man's trying to rape me. This Hebrew, she tells her husband, this Hebrew you brought here, he's now trying to rape me. So Potiphar has Joseph thrown in prison, the prison of the captain of the guard. And, in prison, he makes out pretty well there, too. He's given charge, and some prisoners are brought to him. Very important prisoners from Pharaoh's court, and he interprets their dreams. And the one prisoner who was the cupbearer of the king has a very nice dream because he's going to be restored to his office. And so when Joseph tells him that, he's very happy about it. But Joseph says, when you're restored to your office, please don't forget me. I didn't do anything worthy of imprisonment. Get some word so that Potiphar will release me from this guardhouse where I'm kept. So 2 years go by, and 2 years, no word. So Joseph remains in prison. And only after that does Pharaoh have more dreams, and the dreams are suddenly remind the chief cupbearer of the promise he made to Joseph, because he knows about this Hebrew who can interpret dreams. And so he's brought to the court of Pharaoh, interprets... Oh, he's jailed first, by the way. I'm going to mark that out. Egyptians would have to come in with clean faces. So none of this bearded stuff around the court of Pharaoh. But with Hebrew society, be very different. But anyway, he's shaved and brought to Pharaoh. He interprets Pharaoh's dreams, and Pharaoh makes him the second in command of the whole country, drives the second chariot, was the way they put it. So here he is now in the service of Pharaoh. Okay, that's the story. Now, just a minute, though. Think about it. Think about, first of all, God's blessing on Joseph. And then you'll see how there's God's testing of Joseph. And then how God blesses through Joseph. See, first, Joseph is blessed. He's tested. And then through Joseph, there is blessing. Just think about how that works for a moment. God's blessing on Joseph. What was it? Well, all the way through the story, the Lord was with him. The favor of his father. He was the most beloved son of his father's old age. So he was loved of his father. And he was given that coat of many colors that became so famous. But Joseph was chosen of God, given these dreams by God. And the secret of his success was his faith in the Lord. He trusted in the God of his father. He showed faithfulness and integrity in all of his life. He was showing integrity even when he reported to his father what was going out in the sheep fields on the part of his brothers. Because some of the brothers of his father were doing very wicked things, and he reported to his father about them. And then, finally, his faithfulness in service to others. Joseph was always faithful. Faithful to his father. Whatever his father told him to do, he did it. Whatever his brothers needed, he provided for them. he was faithful later to Potiphar, served him faithfully. And to Potiphar's officer that ran the jail, the prison, and ultimately to the Pharaoh. The whole story of Joseph is seldom reflected on, how he changed the whole economy of Egypt and centralized all authority with Pharaoh and got all the people's confiscated their houses ultimately to get a centralized economy. But it's amazing what he did for Pharaoh. Pharaoh couldn't have had a better servant. So he's faithful all the way through to those whom he is serving. And he has constant success. We're told that repeatedly, that God was with him and that God gave him success. He was successful in finding his brothers when his father sent him to find them. He went from Hebron in the south where they were all the way up to Shechem. That's about 60 miles as the crow flies. So he had to go and find his brothers, and he found them. Well, they weren't there in Shechem, but he met a man in the field and said, "Oh, those we saw those men. They went up to Dothan." So that was another trip he had to take, about 21 miles from where he was in Shechem up to Dothan. And Dothan brought him to a pass in the mountains where there was a main trade route where the caravans would go through, going from the east down into Egypt. And so that's where his brothers were, at Dothan. And you see, he was very successful. Go find him, he found him. You know, how many 17-year-olds could you count on to travel more than 60 miles to find these brothers that he knew hated him, and then go beyond that to insist that he'd finish the job, he'd get it done? Well, he did. He got it done. And you know what he got for it. They threw him in the pit and all that. And then he was sold to these traders who just happened to be going through there, you know. And down through with the traders, down to Egypt, he gets sold into the house of Potiphar. And how does he serve Potiphar? Well, just as well as he'd ever served his father. He did everything for Potiphar. Now, he was there quite a number of years, you know. We're talking here now, the space of about a decade, more or less, that he's serving Potiphar. Well, he had to learn a lot in Potiphar's service, didn't he? Did you ever think about that? Because he became the chief steward of Potiphar, which means that now he can read and write Egyptian hieroglyphics, or the cursive if they used it then. I'm not up on that exactly, but there it was. He had to learn Egyptian. He had to learn the principles of accounting. He was in a different culture. He had to adjust to that culture. I mean, talk about missionaries getting at home in the culture. This is one of the fastest on record. He was amazingly successful. And we're told that everything that happened, whether it was in the household or management, whether it was food provision for the guests, whether it was or anything outside or inside, his service in the court, Joseph was his counselor in everything. And all that Potiphar had to think about was eating his meals. He didn't even have to plan them. Joseph had it all taken care of. Did everything. Amazing. And then, of course, after the incident, and when he's thrown in jail by furious Potiphar, well, partly furious Potiphar. If he had fully believed his wife, he surely would have had Joseph killed. But interestingly, he did not have him killed. He just had him thrown in jail. I think because he suspected that maybe he hadn't heard both sides of the story. But in any case, Joseph is thrown in jail. And what happens in jail? Well, I don't have to tell this story anymore, do I? You know what happens in jail. He goes into the jail. He does everything so well in the jail. Then pretty soon he's running the jail. And the guy who's the captain in charge of the jail, he doesn't have a thing to do because it's all taken care of by Joseph. He can trust him completely, trust him with the prisoners. So when the prisoners show up, and these are one the cupbearer and the baker for the Pharaoh, and they show up in the jail, and can you believe this? He's so faithful in doing the job of taking care of the jail, that here come two important prisoners, and he looks at him in the morning, and he says, "Why are you fellows so discouraged? You look so sad this morning. What's the trouble, man? I mean, what kind of care is this? I mean, he's supposed to be a jailer. Hey, how are you guys doing this morning?" Not good, I can tell. What's the trouble? Well, we had these dreams, and we can't interpret them. And Joseph, always a faithful witness, says, "Well, God's the one that interprets dreams, you know." And so he interprets their dreams. And the one he was glad to interpret. The second one he had to be prodded a bit, because the first one, the guy sees the cupbearer sees these three clusters of grapes, and he squeezes out the grapes and three clusters into a cup and takes the cup and brings it to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh has his wine. Then Joseph, of course, when he interprets it, the three clusters or 3 years, and after 3 years, he's going to be three days. I'm sorry, I got that all mixed up. It was only 3 days. In 3 days, he would be restored and be taking the cup again to Pharaoh. So that worked out very well for him. The other one, of course, the baker, had the dream of having three baskets of bread on his head to take to Pharaoh, and the birds come and eat it. And so that the three baskets then mean 3 days before he is going to... Well, it's in Hebrew, it talks about the head being lifted up. And the head of the first man is lifted up in the sense that he's taken up out of jail. He lifted up his head. And the head of the other man is also lifted up in the Hebrew, but in another way, with a rope. But see, I mean, this is a wonderful story, but...